Welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in once again to Brio TV, the podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by Hollywood Suite, Jan on CTV, and Super Channel. Express yourself. Express yourself. Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for joining me here at Brio TV, the podcast. It's a lot of fun. You're going to sit down comfortably, get comfortable, enjoy yourselves, because we have a very funny man joining us today, a fellow I've interviewed many times. You know him, you love him, and you've watched Corner Gas, and now you're enjoying Corner Gas Animated, Mr. Brent Budd. Brent, thank you very much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Good to see you.
And Brent, why are you talking to me today?
I don't know. Every time we have a chat, I say to myself, why the hell am I talking to Bill Brio? How did this transpire? Do I stand to gain from this, I say to myself?
Yeah, not even Canadian Tire money, Brent. But
it's an age-old question.
Yeah.
No, I'm shamelessly plugging season 3 of Corner Gas Animated that's coming down the pike. It's about to burst forth onto the television screens across the nation.
Yes, and I've seen the first 2 new episodes, and they're funny as hell. Congratulations. Excellent. Yeah, I really enjoyed them. Folks, you're in for a treat. One of the guests, and Brent has many this season, is Arcade Fire. And there's a scene that literally takes place in an arcade, and it's I don't want to spoil it, Brent, but it's actually on fire.
It's on fire, yeah. So that's the type of incredible left-turn comedy I'm able to pull out of the satchel with gags. Yeah. Arcade Fire. What if they were in an arcade that was on fire?
You know, and honest to God, it's as funny as hell. So I thank you for doing that. And here we are talking, and what's pretty cool, the fact that you've extended Corner Gas. You're almost like Canada's Star Trek franchise here, right? You're able to find new ways to extend it with the original players and
pumpers. That's what they'll call the Trekkie version of Corner Gas fans, is the pumpers.
Pumpers. Okay, good to know.
came up with that. I don't know.
Well, let's make it a thing. It's hard making television at the best of times. It's hard in Canada making it at the best of times. But now we're in COVID times. We have this pandemic, and people are having a very hard time being safe in a studio, shooting and wearing masks and social distance and everything. Animation seems to be the one form of television that is a little bit immune from these shutdowns. Are you finding that to be true, that you're able to carry on and produce your show despite this pandemic?
Yeah, we were able to continue on really without missing a beat. We had to make some adjustments, but as opposed to, like you said, many live productions where people have to gather in the same room together to make their show, a lot of them had to shut down. There was no choice. Whereas I don't want to downplay it, because it did take some adjusting and adapting and rolling with it, but it was an option that we had I feel very blessed that we were able to keep going.
Because generally, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, you start off obviously writing the show, which is the same process you would have if you were doing a live action sitcom, and that's something that you can do safely at your computer or socially distanced with others. But it's the actual production, getting it animated, getting, drawings approved. And how long does it per episode? How many months does it take to pull together each 22-minute or 30-minute show?
It's hard for me to break it down that way. I know that in order for us to do, it comes down to, like, we do between 11 and 13 episodes a year. It takes us a full year to get those done. So in a way, it's kind of like an episode a month. But it's not as easy to define. Like, we were able to do in the live action, we were able to just say we do 2 episodes over a course of 8 days. You know, it's hard to give it that same kind of finite.
Right.
Because there's a lot more things that are happening concurrently in animation. So it's hard to really get a start time and an end time.
Do you find you know, was the did the first season take twice as long as the others because that's where you're developing the characters or the storyboards or whatever, yeah. You're laying down the blueprint, and does it get a little quicker as you get into season three?
Yeah, and you're creating all the assets that you can use over and over. So we had to create the gas station, we had to create the ruby, all the different angles, all those things had to be created from scratch. But once you create them, then you bank them. And for the, you know, the next episode, if you're going to do a scene in the ruby, well, you have all that, the background and all the angles that you need are there, and the walking cycles and all the different moving bits, and you know, all those had to be created for the very first time in season one. So that took longer. But once you have all the parts, then it starts flowing a little smoother. And I really feel like we, you know, season three, we've really come into our stride. I was very proud of season one and season two, but season three, it feels like this is where we have the right rhythm. We have the flow. When I'm in the room with the writers, although we're not in the room anymore, we're on there online, we're meeting up. We all seem to have a really good sense of the pace of the show as it exists in this animated form. And as a result, the cast have each of them have said to me at one point, I think this season is much better than the last two.
Wow. Well, that's pretty good because the standard was already there. I have to say, just seeing two, I agree. And what's amazing in a way, it's the same show. You must find yourself wondering, why did we ever go to all this trouble of getting dressed up and made up to do this? You know, like the even in the idea that because it's animated, you could take advantage of more exaggeration. But in watching those two shows, there's a flooded basement. There's a lot of Canadian geese. And otherwise, I don't think you really extended the boundaries of animation. You know, like you're still telling that same story, aren't you?
Yeah, we never wanted to fracture our reality. I mean, we didn't want to do that in the live action either. That's why we kind of created those fantasy pop-outs where we can see what somebody's thinking so that we can, if somebody had a really funny idea but it was too big for the reality, I didn't want it to fracture the reality. So we thought, well, what if we just imagine what they're doing? And then that doesn't hurt the real world. And so we're able to carry that over. And like you said, just do it a little bit bigger in the animated world. But I didn't want it to not feel like Corner Gas. It felt important. For me, it was important that the show felt like Corner Gas. Like it just seemed like more episodes. It was already going to be different enough visually going from the real world to 2D animated world. Hearing the same voices helps. But I wanted to see if we could just, you know, bring that same flavor and feel. Everything that worked in real life, you know, I didn't want to suddenly mess with it and have it like, you know, like when Gilligan's Island went into space. I didn't want, you know, Gilligan's asteroid or whatever. I didn't want to change it up like that. I wanted to give people more of what they like.
Who was the little space band that used to follow Fred Flintstone around in the last season?
Gazoo, the Gazoo. Great Gazoo.
You didn't want to
Gazoo. You ever hear that Harvey Korman story?
I know he did the voice of Gazoo,
yeah. But no. So no, what? Harvey Korman said one time he was, you know, it was like maybe the 80s or something like that, and he walked into the living room at his house. His grandkids were over, and they were laying on the floor, and they were watching the Flintstones, and there was an episode with the Great Gazoo in it. And he said, so I said to my grandkids, I said, you know, I did the voice of Gazoo there. And he said, they looked up at me, and they said, you used to work, Grandpa?
Wow, that's harsh. Yeah, boy, did he ever work. No, was anybody ever funnier than Harvey Korman on television?
Money in the bank, that guy.
He sure
and
was.
The magic of him and Conway together, that yeah. was one of those, you know, even at times they contrived to get them where they needed to be, but there was an undeniable magic of those two together.
Yeah.
And also Korman and Mel Brooks together. There was a bit of magic.
No kidding. Absolutely. Blazing Saddles, man. Now, do you ever find people come up to you now and say, listen, I've watched Corner Gas Animation. Where in the world did you find somebody who could impersonate all those voices so well like that? You know, do people understand that those are the originals?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of, when we were shifting into animation, we wanted to let people know that it's the cast. The cast is all back, with the exception of Janet Wright, who passed away, sadly. Everybody else is back. And then Janet's character, Emma, is now played by Corinne Coslow, who is a really good friend of Janet's that was recommended to us by Janet's husband. So in a way, it's kind of kept it all in the family. It feels really nice.
Amazing.
But everybody else from the original cast is back. Our eight main cast members.
And it really does help shift you directly back into that same show.
It makes the transition easier for people.
It sure does. I was talking to the film historian Leonard Maltin, and he's a great animation buff as well. And he was telling me this amazing story about the Jetsons. You remember the Jetsons?
Sure.
So the guy who did the voice of George Jetson was George O'Halloran, I think. And he did that in 1961. That show really only lasted 1 year. They just played it forever. And then in the mid-90s, they revived it. And the casting agent was trying to find somebody to do the voice of George Jetson. And Maltin happened to know that George was still alive and said, why don't you use George O'Halloran? He's alive. So the casting guy who hunted him down, and O'Halloran was on his last legs. He wasn't well, but he had good days and bad days. And this guy who was basically Helen Hunt's dad, the casting agent for this cartoon, decided he was going to hire him to do George Jetson again, even though it meant he was going to have to literally repeat every line and pull it out of him, and it was going to take three times longer. But he wanted the authenticity, and he also provided this very happy ending for this guy who hadn't worked in a while, who was able to leave his wife a little bit of money. So, and he literally died after the show was done. So it's a sweet animation. I hate to go on and on with your time, but
no, that's nice.
Isn't that a cool story?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You know, it reminds me of, we were talking to Mel Brooks when you've probably heard this story, but when they were doing Young Frankenstein, it was important to Mel that they, you know, make the laboratory look as much like the laboratory from the Frankenstein movie. Right. And they were like, well, you know, the guy who designed that, you could go talk to him about what it took to put it together and see if he has the old designs and everything. He's still alive. He lives at such and such. So they go to his address to talk to the guy, and they explain, we're making this movie, Young Frankenstein. And he says, oh, you want the stuff? I mean, what do you mean the stuff? Goes to the garage. He's got all the laboratory equipment from the original Frankenstein movie just sitting in his garage. Wow. And Mel Brooks, who was like, you mean this is... Because he thought they were going to have to try and rebuild it from drawings. And here the guy's just sitting on the actual old stuff.
I never knew that was a story. I knew that they reused it, but I thought it must have been at 20th Century Fox or somewhere in a vault. But that's even better. That's pretty cool. Let's talk about some of the other guests you've got in season three. I noticed Andrea Martin's name popped right out.
Yeah, personal kind of a comedic hero of mine. Yeah. So I was very excited to get her on the show. And she plays herself, Andrea Martin. She's in the show. Brent has decided to lose some weight, and he's trying out these diet drinks. Andrea Martin's Heart Smart and Full Meal in a Can. And we see a commercial and so it was kind of exciting for me because I got to write this song, this kind of commercial jingle, and there's Andrea Martin singing it. So you can imagine for, a teenage kid in Tisdale, Saskatchewan, who wanted to get into Canadian comedy and loved SCTV, to be in a studio in Toronto and, you know, giving Andrea Martin direction as she sings a song that I wrote it's going to be hard to top that. That's pretty cool.
There's not a line you can't give Andrea Martin that she can't make funny, right?
And, she's
is brilliant. I think, and have you had any other SCTV folks on as voices before?
We had any other SCTV folks on? I don't believe we have. I'd love to get Rick Moranis on. I'm a big fan of Rick Moranis. I mean, I'm a fan of all you know, the whole gang, like everybody on that show. That was what an amazing confluence of comedic talent that came together there for that show.
Yeah, well,
but yeah, we have a ton of great guest cameos coming on. We got a fun wrestling episode where we have Lance Storm and Bret the Hitman Hart and Trish Stratus are all in the this kind of wrestling episode.
What was the thinking there, Brent?
Well, I had this idea for Brent and Hank get to meet this this wrestler that they really liked, who was coming into town because he's a podcaster now. I know that Lance Storm, real life Lance Storm, is a former wrestler who does a podcast, and I know him a little bit, and so I reached out to him, and he's always been a fan, kind of a champion of our show. Wow. He's always touting it to his followers. And so, and I got to meet him once. He came to see me at a live stand-up show. So anyway, I reached out to him, and he was keen to do it. And then there's another wrestler that ends up confronting him in the episode. And we decided, let's see if we can get Bret the Hitman Hart to do it. So that's how that just kind of came together. It's like it always starts out just with an idea, like a comedic idea for an episode. And then we kind of think, well, you know, it'd be fun if we could get to play this part. And that's kind of how it always comes together.
Well, I noticed you also have Bret Kissel coming up. And I thought maybe you're just trying to book guys named Bret or Brent, that was part of the,
well, I was pretty, that was a smooth move with me. Very prescient because, right. You know, I know he's a fast rising, country singer and people dig him and he's a very talented guy. So I reached out to him, got him on the show cause we needed somebody to sing at this country song that we had written about a dead dog named Puddin'. That Jen Siddle, who wrote that episode, put the lyrics together. And so he comes on and he sings the song and does a very funny job with it, great job. And then, you know, months go by, and doesn't he get named Canadian Country Music Association's Male Singer of the Year guy? So I'm on the cutting edge of what's out there culturally, the zeitgeist. That's what I'm all about.
Nicely done. Who do you like in the Super Bowl? I should. You're going to be predicting things. We got to get
Super Bowl. What's that? Yeah. That's four down. Is that the four down ball?
Pardon me. Bite my tongue.
Who watches the?
There is no CFL this year.
Who needs four downs to make 10 yards?
We're living in a world without the CFL, without the Rough Riders. What's going on?
Well, it's worrisome to me. It's bothersome to me because the CFL doesn't have a ton of wiggle room revenue-wise.
No.
They're not sitting on vast vaults full of cash like the NBA or something.
Right.
So it's a tough time, I think. It's a little scary. This is a beer and bologna league, you know?
See, I thought that would have been the one league that could have carried on because the people in the stands are already socially isolated.
How dare you, sir?
I'm sorry.
How dare you?
I was sitting there. Jason Priestley is going to be a star coming this year on our show.
He is very, very funny cameo as an executive at Red Whip Licorice, which is Wanda's favorite licorice company. And she's trying to get them to sponsor some stuff. And so he's trying to have to politely decline to Wanda that they don't want to sponsor her little endeavor, and she's not the type to take no for an answer.
No, that's for sure. Some of the stuff Nancy's character there gets away with is hilarious. There's a joke about Chumbawanga. What's the gum? There's some that there's some very, very funny lines.
Cucumbawamba.
Cucumbawamba.
Cucumber flavored gum. Cucumbawamba. Yeah. She said she doesn't like it. She said I chew one down, and it comes up again.
Right. Yeah. Very. Is that your line?
That was my line, yeah.
Nicely done. Nicely done. You're writing it, of course, with are it the same people that you've been doing the first two episodes, seasons?
Some, and then some new writers. So we're always folding new brains and new minds into the mix, you know, fresh young blood coming in. So, you know, myself and Andrew Carr, who's been on since season one, he and I, and he worked on Hiccups with me as well. He and I, you know, old friends we met doing stand-up in the 80s. And so he was all through Corner Gas and through Hiccups with me. And he's continues on in his role in the writing room, although he's been bumped to co-executive producer now.
Nice.
Been with us long enough. And we started the season with a number of new writers aside from it. So Andrew and I are the old guard and then some new faces, new voices. And each season we've been able to add and fold in some other new voices. So it's been a lot of fun for me to get to sit down in the writing room with people who have a fresh perspective, different set of eyes. It's exciting. It's thrilling as a writer.
And you also have Jay and Dan from TSN, right?
Back.
You've had them on before.
Yeah. So, and we draw, they're a couple of hot young studs in this episode. They're really, and you know, I've never seen either of them shirtless, but we see them shirtless in the cartoon. I think we've done them a huge favor. They're really ripped, buff and ripped.
You can do that.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Well, that's
I've given myself season one hairline, so why wouldn't
I've noticed
I?
That. We've the talked power. Before. You said that's the power of animation. You've got season one corner gas hairline perpetually. Wouldn't we all like to have that? That's pretty good. I could get rid of this beard.
Turn it upside down.
Yeah. Absolutely. Root it up there. Listen, we're going to take a short break just to hear from a couple of sponsors. Then when I come back, I want to talk to you a bit about stand-up and comedy and touring and all of that, how things have changed, what you're doing. And we'll get to Brent Butt from Corner Gas Animated in just a moment. You know, this has been a hard year for film festival fans. Most festivals in 2020 have been shut down due to the coronavirus outbreak, leaving cinemas in the dark and Canadian filmmakers without a place to showcase their latest efforts. Well, faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than gargling with hydrochloroquine, comes Super Channel to the rescue. Yes, Super Channel, the specialty pay TV service, it's come along with a great idea, and that's to show virtual film festivals, and they've partnered recently. They partnered with the Edmonton International Film Fest, and they showed shorts and features on there. And coming up later this month, starting October 28th, they're doing another festival. They're partnering with the Blood in the Snow Film Festival. So just in time for Halloween, kids, some scary feature films, some creepy stuff, some good old-fashioned Halloween gore. That's coming at you courtesy of Super Channel. Super Channel, it's available through your cable company or through Amazon Prime.
You think there's not a lot going on, but look closer, baby, you're so wrong.
Well, we're back with Brent Butt and talking Corner Gas Animated. It's returning for a third season. It's coming up October. What's the date, Brent?
October 12th, and we're starting with two back-to-back episodes of the new season 3. And all October 12th on CTV Comedy, they're going to be doing marathon. They're going to be playing episodes from season 1 and 2, and then that'll lead into that evening two back-to-back episodes of season 3 to kick things off. And then it runs all the way through to Christmas. We have a special Christmas episode we did.
That's what I hear. Yeah. Tell us about that. What's happening on the Christmas episode?
The episode's called Tinselitis. Oscar and Emma realize that they can, you know, Emma comes down with a bit of a cold, and Oscar and Emma realize that they can play up the their illness to get Hank to do a bunch of their Christmas chores for them. And Lacey and Brent are trying to exchange gifts that are personal. There's lots going on. Wanda has created a means of siphoning electricity from the city for her huge display, and that causes problems with Karen and Davis's radio, so they got to try and shut her down. It was a lot of fun because it's the corner gas feeling, but then there's snow and there's lights, and it's a feel good episode. It really, you know, it has that nice kind of feel good Christmas thing that you want to have, warms your cockles, but it also has that kind of corner gas snide bend to it. So I'm really happy with how the Christmas episode came together. We just heard back from the network today. They said they loved it so much.
Wow. And the beauty of a Christmas episode is you can run it every year, right?
Yeah.
And do you have, I know a lot of sitcoms would do Christmas episodes. Does any stick out for you that you have in mind when you were fashioning this? Did you go back and look at, a Brady Bunch Christmas or, Murray Tyler Moore show or something like that?
The Honeymooners had a Christmas episode that I always found really charming and very nice. It was kind of, I think it was a play on the old, what's the old fable about the husband and wife who he buys her a brush, but she'd cut off her hair to get him the thing. You know, it was kind of a play on that old story, but they did it really, really well.
With the bowling ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful episode.
It's in the bag, right? And he sold the ball to get her the present that she wanted.
Yeah, and talk about that show, Brent. Now, here's The Honeymooners, shot on a stage, one set. I mean, they made, I think, 39 in 1 year, and they just show them forever. you could not be more naked in terms of presenting some entertainment for an audience, could you? Like, it's literally walking on a high wire, and yet it, to this day, retains all that emotion. It's extraordinary, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to the individuals, and I think Jackie Gleason was a genius in many regards, as much as I love hearing stories about what an egomaniac he was, like a lunatic egomaniac, you know, and Art Carney, legitimate genius. I think it was just, you know, again, a confluence of people. I mean, I think that's one of the things that Corner Gas, one of the reasons that people responded to it, is those intangibles that you can't really put your finger on and you can't anticipate. You know, we had good writers and good writing. And the acting and actors were good, but it's the classic example of the sum, you know, the total being greater than the sum of its parts, right? The actors are all great and the writing was all great. And our crew was a talented crew who knew how to put shows together. But that is often the case, and it doesn't click with people. And there was something, that's those intangibles, a little kind of magic, that when we had these people doing these scenes, it was just better than you would think it was going to be.
Right. Yeah. No, your cast is, it's hard to imagine anyone else in them, but you and I have talked before, and you told me that you actually had another Canadian, rather iconic comedian performer in mind for Oscar at one point, but sadly the gentleman passed away or was in ill health.
Yeah. And, Billy Van was right. Who I was thinking of. I kind of had people in mind for almost all the parts. Mm-hmm. And ultimately none of them got the parts. It was all, you know, we had a casting process and we just like, one of the things I'll always be grateful to CTV about during this process was, They gave us the time and the resources to cast a wide net. We weren't trying to cast a show in a narrow window of time in a small section of the country. We had time and we cast all over the place. We cast through the prairies and in Toronto, and we saw tapes from the East Coast and the West Coast, and we had auditions here in Vancouver, and it allowed us to not rush and really wait until we found people who went, wow, what an amazing read, and people that just felt right. And when we were having a difficult time, like with the Davis character and the Wanda character, mm-hmm. having a heart, we saw lots of good people, but nobody that just kind of had that thing that made you think this was just right. Like with the Wanda character, I initially wrote the Wanda character older, and we read lots of good people, but nobody was quite clicking for me, and you know, our casting agent said to me, would you be willing to look younger for the Wanda character? And I said, yeah, you know, there's no reason she has to be of a certain age. And she said, because if you're willing to look younger, you know who I think would be really good in this role is Nancy Robertson. And I knew of Nancy from Vancouver Theatre Sports. And so I was able to say, yeah, she's really funny. Let's see if she'll read. And she came in and read for it. And everybody across the board was like, boom, there it is. We have our Wanda. But if we hadn't had the time.
Yeah.
And the flexibility to shift gears like that and say, yeah, let's, you know, we wouldn't have had Nancy in the bar.
And you had a couple of people from Saskatchewan, right?
For us, yeah,
I think
that's right.
Eric's originally.
Yeah. From and Saskatchewan. So is Janet.
Yeah.
Janet was from Saskatchewan.
And they knew each other as teenagers pretty well back in the day, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Good story. Yeah. It's wonderful.
And they got a real kick out of the fact that they were flown to Regina for a screen test together. to them, that was hilarious. Brought them in from Vancouver and Toronto to Regina for a screen test.
Do they still give tours of the Corner Gas town of the...
They do.
Oh, that's fantastic. People pay and they get on a bus and they're taken to the Rose and they're taken around to the places that are still, I guess, have some signage up and things.
Yeah, so unfortunately, the gas station and Ruby set had to come down because that was a lot of people think that was an actual building. It was just a testament to our amazing set designer Hugh Shankland made it look so authentic. But it was just that was an empty field. It wasn't even a field. It's kind of a bog. We had chosen that spot and we thought this will be fine because we're only going to be doing 13 episodes this one season, so no problem. And then it ended up being this thing that ran for a hell of a long time.
Yeah, yeah, six seasons.
So that had to come down. But there's still, you can go see the sites. You know, the police station is there and the Howler's there. The building that was the Fumart, that burnt down.
Wow, that's crazy.
So that's another one of the great things about animated is now these things are locked in forever.
They are. Yep, you can't burn it down. Let's talk a little bit about, and again, just to remind folks, it's on Monday nights on CTV Comedy, the Corner Gas Animated. Touring and stand-up and comedy, I mean, you know, fellows like you would be traveling hither and yon these days, Ron James and other guys, you know. What's that been like, having to sort of sit out the sitcom side of things? You may have been too busy writing and producing this show, but has it affected your schedule in terms of theater showings?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I had a whole run of shows booked through Ontario that had to get shelved. And yeah, all my live stand-up stuff, even corporate shows, corporate events, that I do a lot of that kind of thing, those were all taken away. But for, you know, I get to, it really hits home how fortunate and blessed I am that I have this other thing that I'm doing. Because my friends who are just stand-ups, that's it. Live performing is everything they do. Musicians too. It all, you know, 97% of their revenue was yanked away. I mean, in some cases, basically every cent that they had on the books for the year was yanked away, and there was no knowing when it was going to come back. And, you know, my heart goes out to these guys. A lot of good buddies of mine, you know, really found themselves in a tough time. And you can be creative and, you know, out of necessity, and you can do some stuff online, but that only goes so far, you know. So it's been a really tough row for a lot of guys. And, you know, for me, it was like, yeah, I had to cancel this run of shows, but, you know, maybe I'll do that run next year. And I just focused on writing scripts and writing my book. And that's I'm blessed that way.
It is hard to think, you know, of Broadway being dark for like a year or like you say, all these live stages. Tell me a bit about this book. What's that all about?
Well, you know, it's been on my list of things to do for a long time. I kind of have this list of things I want to write. And of course, a novel was one of those things. Hmm. And I'd been sitting on an idea for a novel that I liked and I felt that I could probably write if I ever got the time. And, you know, here I found myself being kind of housebound for months on end. So, I took advantage of having that time to see if I could actually bang out this novel. And I'd never written a novel before. I'm not even a real voracious reader of fiction. I certainly have read a lot more novels in the last 5 years than I probably have the rest of my life combined. Mm. But I do enjoy reading fiction. And, So I wrote this book, and it's kind of a dark, gritty, psychological thriller. It's a, it's not a comedic romp, although it's set against the backdrop of comedy. It's basically two stand-ups, one from Chicago, one from Ireland, who are at different points in their career, different trajectories, find themselves for different reasons, accepting a kind of a sketchy run of shows through a remote and rural chunk of Canadian countryside. Wow. With a young opening act who they start to get the sense as they're driving through this remote open country that he may not be, he's emotionally volatile and clearly violent, has a capacity for violence. And there they are with him in the middle of nowhere doing this run of bad shows. And it gets, like I said, it's dark. I've had really good feedback from the beta readers that I've had reading it to get, you know, you put it out there and you get notes from people.
Wow.
And, you know, people saying this is not what I would have expected from you, and I really enjoyed it. So,
do you have a title?
It's called Huge.
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 Wow. Yeah. Is it 900 pages?
It's a ridiculous opus. No, it's, you know, it's a good length for a thriller. It's right around 80,000 words, 79,000 words. Okay.
I think if it's called Huge, it's got to be, you
know. Yeah. No, it's based on the title comes from a couple things. One is the character that their opening act that clearly is not hinged properly and is violent. is a big guy, but he's taken the last name Huge as his stage name because he thinks it's motivational for him. So he's changed his last name to Huge because that's what he's going to be. So it's rep. The title comes from the character being his, the character's name is Hobie Huge. It's a stage name.
Nice.
And also they're in, you know, they're in a van under this huge patch of sky in the middle of nowhere.
Wow. This is, sounds fantastic. I mean, many years ago, I did some stand up with a buddy of mine, the two of us. And I remember that world. And there did seem to be a fine line between comedy and horror. There were aspects of it that were creepy. And I remember, you know, going out in at Barrie, they had a place called Tickles, and it would be wintertime, and there'd be kids my age, 21 or 2, and in locked in their Mazdas with the windows up and the heater on with Queen cranked because they were trying to psych themselves up to do this horrible thing, which was go on stage. And it just seemed like a ordeal, you know, like you would, there were aspects of that all the time too.
Well, it draws a certain, you know, I don't think very many people are drawn to stand up that don't have some level of psychosis and neurosis, right? I mean,
probably,
so there's different levels of it. And I've often found myself in this situation. It's kind of what's inspired the story from the get-go, is like being in a car with somebody you don't know, maybe somebody from another country. And as you're driving along, you're hearing them say things, and you're getting their sense of the world. You're starting to see the world through their lens, and you start going, "Wow, this is clearly somebody that isn't wired upright." And here we are in the middle of nowhere, and I hope this doesn't go sideways.
Well, you know, a lot of it is because comedians are more likely to be professional observers, right? You're always looking and thinking about it. So that's seems to be what you're doing with the book. That's great. Now, if you watch TV like me, you've probably caught the second season of Jan. This is the brilliant CTV comedy starring Jan Arden. Jan Arden, singer-songwriter. You've heard her, you've known her. But last season when she premiered with this show, I was just blown away that here she was doing shtick, doing slapstick with some of the best performers on television, and then very serious moments. You know, this show deals with a lot of things, and it was just quite an achievement for Jan Arden. So take it in, check it out. Jan Arden, she's back on Jan, airing at Mondays at 8 p.m. on CTV and everywhere CTV content can be found. Well, here we are in the month of October, but you know, at Hollywood Suite, they call it Shocktober. Yes, that's right. Thrills and chills all month long. They've got Shocktober classics. You can find your favorite horror movies all in one place, Hollywood Suite. You can see films like Night of the Living Dead, The Shining. I mean, The Shining. I still sleep with a crucifix every night. Zombieland is another one. Alien. Wow, you get to see Sigourney Weaver in her underwear. Seven. That's a scary film. Silence of the Lambs. They've got every single thing you can think of. Check it out all month, Shocktober, on Hollywood Suite, and just $5 a month. See, that's not scary at all. Now, Brent, I want to ask a bit more about just animation. Usually I ask folks to tell me their favorite shows as a kid, but since you're doing Corner Gas Animated, let's just stick to that. Did you grow up a fan of certain animated shows? I'll throw a few titles at you, see if they ring a bell.
Well, you can see over my shoulder here.
Oh, okay.
Spider-Man Pinball Game.
Well, of course. Yeah. Folks, I can see this, but I'm talking to Brent. We're on, obviously, a Zoom format here, and I can see into his place, and there's this beautiful Spider-Man Pinball Game. What was the story? That was at your...
It's a 1980 Spider-Man Gottlieb game, and that same game was in my hometown when I was a kid. It was in the back of the bus depot. And if I had a spare quarter, I'd run in there and play Spider-Man pinball. And then when I was looking for, because the space that I'm in here, it's my garage, but it's kind of I call it the game room studio because I do a lot of the AV stuff out here, and I, you know, work on storyboards and things like that out here. Production stuff, but it is a game room as well. There's a foosball table and a poker table, and I wanted a pinball machine out here. So when I was looking for pinball machines, there's a place here in Vancouver called John's Jukes, and I went there, and they didn't have anything that I really liked. They had a Harlem Globetrotter game there, but it was spoken for. Mm. And so he said to me, well, tell me what you like, and I'll keep an eye out. And I said, well, I like games circa mid-70s to mid-80s, and I like sports, and I like superheroes. And he said, all right, I'll keep an eye out. And 3 weeks later, so he said, I got a game here you might like. Came down, and there it was, Spider-Man, 1980 Spider-Man Gottlieb game. And I said, that was in my hometown.
Oh my God.
And so amazing. I bought it.
That's fantastic. Now, I once saw a game like that in L.A., in Beverly Hills. And it was a Bally, I think, pinball game. And it was Bobby Orr. And he was wearing a Chicago Blackhawks sweater. Wow. Yeah, I know.
Real narrow window that they
right. Yeah, for those four games he played with the Hawks. Anyway, every home should have a pinball, so good for you. Spider-Man, that was the animated series. And who was the voice of Spider-Man? Wasn't that a Canadian?
Yeah, Paul Soles. He was somebody else that we were looking at for Oscar because I was a big fan of Paul Soles.
Oh,
it was another exciting thing for me. I was like, man, the voice of Spider-Man is auditioning to be on my show.
And he was also at one of the great Christmas animated specials, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, right?
He was also, do you remember, there was a Canadian kind of game show called This is the Law?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
He was the kind of the comedic actor on that when they had to act out these people breaking the law. It was always Paul Soles.
He just recently did a CBC Gem digital show, I think, about roommates. One's a grandfather and one's the grandson.
Yeah, there's a very funny stand-up from Vancouver here who lives in New York now. And I told him about this story. He was like, what? Because he has a whole bit. His life was when he moved to New York, he's got a roommate who's this 77-year-old lady. And he's like a 30-something stand-up.
There you go.
And he does a bunch of stuff in his act about it.
Very funny.
I was like, yeah, I don't know if they ever saw your stand-up act, Phil.
Yeah, call my lawyer. Hey, so did you watch Rocket Robin Hood?
Yeah.
Now,
I actually have a working outline for a screenplay for, I would love to do a live-action Rocket Robin Hood, and I kind of have a cast with Canadian actors in my
head. Oh, that'd be amazing.
With myself playing Friar Tuck.
Yeah, and you'd have to throw the leg of chicken over each shoulder.
Yeah, very wasteful. As a young food abuser, I was always, he's thrown away. He took one bite of that drumstick, threw it away.
That was probably the least animated show of all time. And the other one was Hercules. You know,
Johnny Nash. It's funny because just this morning I listened to the Hercules theme song because we did a Corner Gas event yesterday. I'll talk about this a little bit too because it's a nice fundraising event that we did for the food bank, and it's ongoing through the weekend. We did a Zoom chat with all the cast.
Nice.
And you know, we recorded it, and we talk about some of the, you know, we talk about the live show and the fun making the new shows. It was a good, fun, funny chat. And people can go on to the YouTube channel, the Corner Gas Official YouTube channel, and find that video. And there's a little link to donate to the food bank. If you're able to or of a mind to, you can make a donation to the food bank. And our show is going to match donations try and double up. So anyway, So if you get a chance this weekend, go to the YouTube Corner Gas Official site and watch that video. But Nancy had made mention of Johnny Nash, I think.
Yeah.
In that video. And then so somebody sent her the video for the Hercules theme song because that was Johnny Nash singing the Hercules theme song.
Did you know that? Yeah, I did know that. And what was it? Iron in his thighs. Wasn't that the one of the lyrics? It was.
I always remember Jeremy Hotz, one of his stand-up bits, he talked about Hercules. He said, with the strength of 10 ordinary men, why didn't 11 guys ever just get together and beat the shit out of him?
That's a good thinking. You're right. That was all it would have taken. Newton would have gotten involved there. Johnny Quest. That was a Hanna-Barbera. I always thought that was pretty
We never saw that one.
No.
So I grew up with only two channels, so I didn't get there were lots that was out there that I didn't have access to.
Well, I'll stick to the Canadian one. This would be before your time, Brent. I'm a bit older. There was a show, and I'm always asking people if they've heard of it because it's pretty obscure, but it was Pick a Letter with George Fair.
No.
Okay. It was a weird, weird, weird show, and I don't know if it exists, and I keep looking for it. It was a guy, there's a fellow George Fair who would draw on the screen, and the today's letter would be S, and S would be for Saturn, and he would draw it right there and then. And finally, Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. This was a later show. Have you ever heard of it?
You may be dreaming some of these. Are you sure that these aren't shows that you dreamt?
I'm pretty sure.
Or it's a fevered state?
I know it sounds crazy, but there actually was not one. It was Peter Mooney from Burden of Truth. He went on and on. Maybe he was pulling my leg, but he mentioned that one. I was more into Rocky and Bullwinkle and melodies and stuff.
Here's one that I often ask people about, and they think I'm making it up. The Perils of Penelope Pitstop.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Good. Hanna-Barbera. I feel validated.
Yeah, yeah. It's she wore a helmet and drove around in a pink car. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, the race car. The Perils of Penelope Pitstop.
Yeah, nicely done. All right, so your favorite theme song then, we usually ask. It doesn't have to be animated, but do you have one?
The two that come to mind right away is and it's instrumental, which is strange for me. But, and for whatever reason, probably, it actually has me a little concerned. I don't know what the deal is here. Maybe three times a week, I wake up and this song is playing in my head. Like as I'm getting ready in the morning, getting dressed, having my coffee, the theme song to Taxi.
Oh my goodness. What a mellow way to wake up.
It's such a beautiful song.
It's just one little
Name of the song? There's a name to the song.
It's played on a flute or a zither or something. It's they're just driving along over the bridge into New York.
Cheers is always puts me in a great mood. Cheers puts me in the mood to write television comedy. That was one of the shows that was very that made me want to write television comedy. The Dick Van Dyke Show certainly planted the seed in my mind. And then that seed kind of drifted away for a while. And there was just something about Cheers, the level of jokes, the number of jokes, just that whole notion of just people are sitting around this bar. And it's very dialogue driven. It didn't seem super plot heavy. It was like, let's find a framework so that we can have these good characters say funny things.
Yeah.
And it just stuck with me. And I could just imagine being a writer in Cheers. It made me want to write TV.
Wow. Well, it was also to me, and you're right, brilliant casting and very funny, great writers on that show. But also one of the saddest. Like, there's something very melancholy about all of those folks, I thought, watching that show. It had a dark side to it, in a way.
I never got that from it. I thought, this is perfect. Sitting around having some drinks and being funny? What a dream. These people are all living the dream, I thought.
Well, yeah. No, there's that. Yeah, for sure. Cheers is great. Well, very good. Okay. Now, we've mentioned everything. We want to remind folks again, Corner Gas Animated, back for a third season. How many episodes?
13.
That's counting the Christmas episode?
I get mixed up because there's certain where the calendar year and the production year cross over in a way that somebody with my low level of intelligence has a hard time grasping. It's either 11 or 13.
All right. Well, there's a special Christmas episode as well. It's on Monday nights on CTV Comedy. Yeah. And do you already start thinking about a fourth season, or when does that process begin?
Yeah, because we have such a tight window. Trying to deliver a season in a year means that we have to just kind of invest and get ahead of the game. I'm working to put story ideas together right now in case we get a green light for a four. And if that green light were not to come, then it was just a bit of, I got to write some episodes that never saw the light of day. That's all that means. But there's no way it's such a tight turnaround, so much work that if I don't put in that investment ahead of time, if we don't put in that investment ahead of time, we would never be able to make it once we get a green light. So,
well, I'm sure you'll get the green light. The third season, from what I've seen, is hilarious. Folks, check it out. Mondays on CTV Comedy. Brent, it's always a great pleasure to talk to you, and it was fun to peer into your garage and see your pinball game. That was very cool. So thank you for taking the time today, and stay safe and well, and hope to talk to you again soon face-to-face.
Yeah, I'd like that. Always a good time chatting with you.
You too. Thank you very much for doing this today.
My pleasure.